What is going on, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. This is episode 43, and I am talking to Amy. So my good friend Laura introduced me to Amy. They go way back. They've known each other for a long time. But Amy has started a place called The Perch. And The Perch is built around the idea of soul care. Amy saw that there wasn't necessarily a place for people to really dive into soul care. So she uses her facility and resources to run spiritual retreats, to bring other people in to run spiritual retreats, to work people through spiritual practices that aren't everyday practices, I guess you would say. And so she talks a lot about soul care in this episode and what soul care means. And I think we have a small definition of what soul care looks like in our lives. And it can be easy to get stuck into a rut and not actually be caring for our souls because we're walking through the same thing that we've always done. And so I think she has a lot of great insight into soul care, into ways to care for ourselves and ways to grow deeper in relationship with God. I think you're really going to like this episode. It is a lot of fun. She is awesome. Great insights into, you know, sort of Enneagram, to knowing yourself, and into growing deeper with God. And I think that's all really important. And it's cool just to see her passion behind what she does, why she does it, and, you know, how it is on Theology of Hustle. You get everything. You get all the stuff that, all the underpinnings of why people do what they do. And I think that's the coolest part. It's awesome. So you're going to love this interview. You're going to love hearing from Amy. If you think about it, go ahead and leave me a rating review right now in iTunes or whatever app you're using. Again, that just helps sort of get the word out about A Theology of Hustle. It also just tells me that you're actually listening. So that's always fun. I enjoy that. It can be hard to know sometimes. So leave me a rating and review, or, you know, in Instagram or whatever, leave me a comment saying what you got out of the interview, and let's start a discussion. I love that sort of stuff. So, you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Theology of Hustle. Yeah, we all got all sorts of great stuff there. Always learning something new. So yeah, follow me, rate, review, all the good stuff, you know? So yeah, I hope you enjoy this interview with Amy. Well, hey, Amy, I appreciate you making the trip and coming and visiting with me and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Heck yeah, I'm excited to get to chat a little bit. So why don't we just jump off here and have you sort of introduce yourself to everyone?
Yeah. So my name is Amy Jackson, and I'm the director of an organization called The Perch, which is all about providing space and skills for soul care. And we're located in Aurora, Illinois.
Nice. Okay. I'm super excited to talk about The Perch. I think it's such a cool thing that you got going on. And obviously,
thanks,
we know Laura, and she's told
yes
me about it forever. But let's talk, though, about sort of what was the steps to get to sort of The Perch?
Yeah. So I tell this quickly because I think it really highlights how it doesn't make any sense.
Perfect.
So I actually went to school for my undergrad to be a middle school English teacher.
Okay.
And then ended up in ministry full time. I was a minister at a church in Aurora.
Oh.
And then was in Christian publishing, creating resources for churches and church leaders, especially around spiritual formation and leadership development.
Okay.
And then I started The Perch. So a little bit of a weird background.
Yeah.
Not okay, like the like stepping stone that you like as an 18-year-old, like, here's my career path.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't make any sense. But I also feel like now in hindsight, as I look back, I feel like I've been like perfectly prepared for what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
But
I find that a
so
lot
bizarre
with people. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is cool. I mean, it's cool how God uses your story. So,
yes.
So, okay. Then let's talk about The Perch and talk about what you do. And then I want to go back and like kind of hear how you feel like you were prepared for all of this. Does that make sense? We'll
yes,
go a little
backwards. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. So The Perch is all about, as I said, providing space and skills for soul care. So it is really predominantly what that looks like is we have a lot of events like retreats and workshops all around helping people experience God and get to know themselves better. Intentionally, I have a really holistic, full idea of what soul care looks like, anything that can help you grow in who you are and who God created you to be. And so that can help in your relationships with God, your relationships with other people, your relationship with earth, and then obviously your relationship with yourself. So our events can be as varied as a silent retreat one weekend, and then we're doing like a succulent wreath creating class in a couple of weeks. So totally all over the map. Yeah. And I love it. And we'll have, sometimes we'll have the same people come to all of them. And sometimes we have people that kind of hone in on their particular type of event that they like, and they like to stick to some of the similar ones. But I just wanted to create a place that kind of stretched your imagination a little bit about what soul care could look like and help you find paths to just continue in your journey with God.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds awesome. First of all, so cool. So, let me just ask about the like events though. I mean, is that all you led? Do you kind of come up with and
Yeah. So I curate all of them lead about half of them. Okay. One of the things I really, really was adamant about when I started this was that I wanted to partner with other people who were in these kind of, I don't know, practices and places that you don't necessarily have a place to do that work. So like spiritual directors don't necessarily have a clear place where they do that. Or I have a friend who is, does the Enneagram and is certified in that. There aren't a lot of places that are clearly like, here's where I would go to do an Enneagram class. Yeah. So we've offered several Enneagram classes. Or I have a friend who is just completely gifted in hand lettering and has her own Etsy shop. And so she's been able to come in and help us learn just artistically, how can we kind of get out of your mind for a little bit and do something creative with your hands. And so I wanted to partner with people who were doing kind of creative things that fell under this holistic banner of soul care. So I do about half, and then about half of the events I partner with someone else, and they do it, and then I just play host for the day.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you brought up Enneagram. Do you know what Enneagram?
Oh yes. You are? Yes. Okay. I am an eight.
You're an eight.
I'm an eight. Really? Yeah. And I'm thank you. I always get, whenever people are like, really? I'm like, thank you so much. Like, this just shows the work that God has done in my life. Yeah. And it's so funny because actually I was introduced to the Enneagram over 10 years ago and absolutely hated it when I first, and it totally had pegged me. I mean, it was like, you are, you know, a blazing eight. And I was
you knew you were eight from the beginning.
Yeah. And I just thought it was just a big hoax. Like, I hated it. And it was actually part of a class for my master's program. And so we had to write like a reflection paper about what we thought of our results. And mine was just scathing. I hated it. I thought it was the dumbest thing ever. Obviously, it was an idiot, you know, test that knew nothing about me. And, you know, here I am 10 years later being like, oh my gosh, I'm such an eight. I mean, that's like a pretty eight response to the Enneagram.
Definitely. Yeah. So. Right. Well, and I think anybody truly owning like your number, there needs to be some like, I hate this, because then you really know that exactly. Like, it's striking a chord.
Like, if you love everything about it, like you probably don't have the right number.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So that's been a fun tool for me once I kind of came to a more humble, realistic place of like, yeah, that really is me. That has been a cool tool in my life to see some clear pathways forward, things to work on and things to, you know, pray for some softening in my own self. And so it's been a joy to be able to partner with my friend that is certified in that and allow him to kind of bring that information to people that are coming to the Perch.
Yeah, that's awesome. I might need to get your friend's number.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that's cool stuff. And I don't know anybody's like certified in my little circle.
Yes.
But, talk about though, I'm going to get stuck here for a minute. I think half of my interviews involve some sort of Enneagram talk.
Love it.
How do you see your eightness playing out in what you do?
Yes. So, a big part of my eightness is the challenging part and seeing, the best way I can describe it is seeing how things are and seeing the way that God really would like things to be and seeing that gap all of the time. Mm-hmm. And so that can be like a really depressing place to be, or it can be a really driving place. And for me, when I'm in a healthy place, it's driving me to see what can I do as part of that? How can I be part of a change? How can I inspire people to see that there's a different way? And so in the different seasons of my life, the challenge can be different things, obviously.
It makes sense.
But so especially in this season, I really think that soul care is so crucial to who we are and who we've been created to be. And I think of that analogy, I hear it like, it's so overplayed, it's so overdone, but like we can't pour out of an empty cup, right? Yeah, like we have to be filled up to be able to help other people, whether it's serving or ministry or whatever type of environment that you hear that in. But I didn't really, for years, didn't really have a clear understanding of how you continually get filled up. There was this vague understanding of being with God or building a relationship with God. And I didn't really know exactly what that looked like. And so it took me getting out of my normal circles in church to begin learning a little bit of what that could look like. And then once I had some basic understandings, then it let my imagination go wild. And I got to really begin growing and learning about so many different ways that we can grow and fill that cup. And so so a big part of where my heart currently is challenging Christians and churches and church leaders to really begin imagining what that looks like for ourselves in really sustaining ways, and not just like, oh yeah, I did that one retreat last year, but what does that look like for regular rhythms so that we can be healthy people in these really crazy traumatic times, so that we can be filled up and that we can actually fill others up. But then I also love to be able to challenge them to, how do I bring this to my people? How do I actually help create an environment where they get to experience God for themselves and that I can actually step out of the way. And so I hope and try to do that in more inspiring and good ways. But I know sometimes my instinct is to be like, but you know, and kind of go off. It's like when it becomes such a truth to me, it's hard to not for other people not to see that truth. If that makes sense.
It's hard for you not to just drive and push and, you know, make somebody, like, hammer it into somebody until they have it, see it your way.
Yes. Which is not good. So I think,
especially for the whole spiritual,
I mean, there's that. Right. And so, but so I love that, like the Perch, especially, and being someone that leads that, I actually like have this natural place to actually just provide that kind of experience and allow that to inspire people and draw them to something, some bigger truth. And I don't have to hammer it into their heads.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it really does. It strikes me. So did you grow up sort of in this evangelical, whatever that means, sort of world?
Yeah, I did not.
Oh, okay.
So I came to faith late in high school.
Oh, okay.
So I, for better or worse, like totally missed like CCM. I missed all of the like
me
early,
too.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. I was 18.
Okay. Yeah. See, like,
no, I think it's for better.
Yeah. I would say, but I mean,
we're less jaded than others.
So. Yes. I think so. Yeah. Yeah. It took me a while to like have some of those experiences where I started thinking like, oh wait, this isn't like a perfect, beautiful place. But at that point I was at least an adult and had some more underpinnings to be able to say like, well, what does this look like? Or what could this look like?
Right.
Rather than like as a youth or as someone who that's your only framework going into adulthood.
So how did you come to faith though? In late high school?
So I actually had a friend invite me to youth group. And I was actually an atheist at the time, like fully did not believe that any God existed.
You were like a professing atheist.
Yes, okay. I was professing. I had actually thought it through and had come to my conclusion. And a friend of mine invited me to youth group and I actually went with really bad motives. A friend of mine, I brought her to join me and we really just went, we were going to make fun of the kids and thought that it would be really hilarious. And
totally, cool joke.
Yeah, totally like a hilarious joke. And I went and it was testimony night and I saw kids that I was in class with that their parents, many of them, their parents didn't want them to be there because I always kind of saw it as something that their parents had made them go to make them moral people. And there were a lot of kids who actually were facing a lot of opposition from their parents for actually being there and sharing their stories. And I thought, what in the world is making these people who are smart, who are in my classes that I respect, come to this place willingly and intentionally? And it made me at least curious enough to go a few more times to check it out. And so thankfully, and that now I can say thankfully, in that time, I really felt like God got a hold of my heart and kind of gave me a vision for what I was missing out on and a new, a just totally different way. So yeah, it was a weird year.
Yes, it sounds like it. It sounds like it. So where did you grow up then?
So I grew up in Aurora. I'm born and raised in Aurora. Yeah. Okay. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
I just always, I guess, so I'm from Texas, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the Bible Belt. And right. like everybody like believes in God, whatever that
yes,
means.
Totally.
So it's like bizarre to hear your story of like these people who are like getting opposition from parents
yes.
to go to church and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it is, it's a pretty unique experience. And so I should say, so prior to that, my parents did like have a very, it was kind of a half-hearted attempt to try to get me to go to church. They themselves didn't go.
Okay.
But in high school they wanted, and how I kind of arrived at being atheist, I should say, is kind of an important part of the story. But my parents decided to take me to a Catholic church and have me go through confirmation, which, again, I had no understanding of anything. I didn't know what was going on. And in that experience, I just had a lot of questions because I thought, well, if I'm going to be going through, I want to know what I'm saying, what I'm doing. Very eight of me to like, I'm like going to challenge. I just want to know what's going on.
Right.
And actually had one of the adult sponsors tell me that I was going to hell because I had questions. That I wasn't allowed to question. And so out of that, I started really realizing, well, if there's a God who is big enough that, but yet he can't take questions, like this is no God that I want to be sure. subservient to. This doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And so I actually explored a lot of that faith so that I could rebut it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
and so I ended up dropping out of confirmation class the week of confirmation, which was a big deal. And so if anything in my growing up, if I had friends that went to church, they were Catholic, which I mean, now understanding, I don't, there's not a, you know, dichotomy there. Or,
yeah, sure.
But at the time that was so, so completely different from this evangelical church that I ended up sure. going to. And so it in a lot of ways was a minority kind of group in what was a largely Catholic, population. Yeah. So, yeah. So yeah, a lot of their parents were very weirded out by it. One of the students, so bizarre, but we had been in the same confirmation class and his mom had been the teacher and he dropped out the same week I had, but neither of us had known because we both weren't there. And then we both ended up
in
the same
youth group
on the same
wow.
night. So, that was a pretty radical
That's crazy.
So his mom was very, very angry that he was there.
Sure.
But there were other people that just, their parents honestly were just totally thrown off by any type of religion and were actually pretty upset that their children were there.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of, yeah, that was so good. And it was so much, I guess to get back to the point, the reason I asked about the whole evangelical sort of cultural piece here is because it seems like in sort of normal, I don't even want to say normal, so sort of basic evangelical traditions, there's a certain way to do spiritual formation, right? There's
exactly.
reading your Bible for
right.
15 and a half minutes
uh-huh.
a day
yep.
and praying for the rest of the 14
and always
and a half,
very yeah. early in the morning.
Right,
always.
Right, yeah. So it strikes me that the Perch maybe intentionally sort of like is throwing off the bonds of some of that
yes.
into more of a mystical tradition? I mean,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely, I mean, and if you follow us on Instagram or Facebook, you'll see we always have scripture passages and we yeah. incorporate that into things. But I think anytime we're doing practices, it's always, I want to put a spin on it. And so we do a lot with like Lectio Divina or more meditative reading of things or painting or coloring as a result of a reading of scripture. And so it just feels very different to me than anything that I was introduced to as a young adult.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with like reading the Bible
yeah.
in a year,
oh, for
anything
sure.
like that.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
actually so much beauty to be gained by doing
yeah.
something like that. But I think it can be harmful when we begin thinking that's the only way
right.
that we can grow and get that cup filled.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm very, I like the mystical tradition. I'm very into that sort of stuff. So what are some of the more surprising practices that you've found in sort of your journey here, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think one thing that I have really enjoyed has been a lot of the more artistic kinds of expressions. So for instance, we have led a workshop on painting a bowl, and then you actually kind of reflect on who God has made you to be. You paint the bowl, you end up breaking the bowl, and then you get to re-put the bowl together using adhesive that actually has gold
in it. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like a kintsugi, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so using some, like actually a Japanese kind of artistic form combined with some reflection and meditation is, every time I've done it, has been an incredibly powerful experience for people. We did a meditative painting class. Someone led that for us this past year. Again, it was just not something that we're often introduced to in most evangelical settings. Sure. And so I think there's something really beautiful around that. And at our Christmas service, we actually did a just a meditative time looking at different icons. And they were all non-traditional icons. And so more modern takes on things. There was a really popular icon actually circulating Facebook around Christmas that actually, it just so happens, is created by a man that I went to youth group with.
For real?
I know, totally bizarre. Like, what are the chances? But it's actually the cover of the Pope's new book. And it is an icon that that shows a refugee family that's an immigrant family that's trying to cross the border. And it's just very thought-provoking, no matter what side you're on politically or where you're at, but kind of represents the Holy Family in that way. And so we were able to look at those kinds of more thought-provoking, provocative icons and say, you know, what do you have for me in this, God? And what does that bring up for me? So that's one kind of big area for me, is just lots of artistic forms and how art speaks to us. The church has such a rich history of art as part of spiritual practices. And yet I feel like in a lot of evangelical spaces, that's just completely been lost.
Yeah.
And then the other one for me is a lot of more ancient prayers. So even things like breath prayer is becoming more popular. I've been hearing more about that. But it's really simply breathing in and praying a name of God and breathing out a desire that can be literally something that can calm your anxiety, that can be done when you're, you know, in the midst of a really trying situation, that can be just done as you're falling asleep, to more kind of in, you know, lots of more intricate, if you will, ancient forms of prayer. One that I've been really recently struck by is centering prayer, which goes against everything I learned as a young evangelical for prayer, because it is literally just sitting in God's presence, just sitting. There's no words. There's no coming up with a list of things I want to pray about. There's no reading scripture. It is just sitting in God's presence and seeing what he has for you in that moment. And it feels so antithetical to everything I learned.
Well, and I think probably antithetical to our culture in general.
Oh my goodness. Right? Yes, totally. So, and it takes some discipline, right? To just actually just sit and be. But it's been a really fruitful experience in my life. And so to be able to bring those kinds of experiences, especially ones that have these ancient histories that have been done for thousands of years in the church. Yeah. So it's not like we're bringing in something that's, you know, new agey, whatever. We're actually tapping into something that's very ancient.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think those practices intentionally fight back against a lot of our like modern desires and, you know, the paces of life.
Absolutely. Even.
I find it fascinating. Like one of the spiritual practices that has really spoke to me a lot is fasting. I fast regularly.
Yes.
But it's like, I mean, people think it's like dangerous to health. I mean, it's almost like, are you trying to kill yourself or something? You know, like
what's
wrong? Really hurt yourself?
Do we need to bring you somewhere and have you talk to someone?
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's just amazing that some of these practices, which from the beginning, like Jesus tells his disciples to fast, right? But some of these practices from the beginning have gone so far out of our purview.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. That so far that we're actually kind of frightened by them, that they actually seem threatening to us, which is so bizarre. I mean, Jesus literally, like you said, is telling his followers, when you do this, and yet we think it's actually scary.
Right. Yeah. But it's a lot of that, even icons and stuff. I mean, those have like, you know, baggage maybe culturally and denominationally.
Yeah, yes.
So, yeah, handling those things, I think, well is cool. So
thanks.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what are some of the influences to like bring you to some of these practices?
Yeah. So for me, one of the most transformational kind of experiences around this was actually when I started my grad program. I actually went to Wheaton College and did spiritual formation or Christian formation in ministry.
When were you there?
So I started in 2008. And yeah, I did.
We were there at the
slow,
same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I went from 7 to 9.
Okay.
I was exegesis and
theology. So. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's funny.
Well, we were in the weird department where we don't do tests and we get made fun of. which is totally fair. So I like own it. It's cool. The super weird part of the hallway. This paints a picture of how weird it is. Our very first class that you had to take before you could take anything else is a personal spiritual formation class. And so it was a whole semester of literally learning about just the breadth of different practices that are out there, getting to try them yourself, getting to figure out which ones were helpful to you, which ones were terrible and you hated them, which ones were terrible, but you should probably do it more. And that's why it was terrible, because you really need it. there was so much that we learned about who we were and how God made us. That was when I was actually introduced to the Enneagram for the first time. And so it was a really fascinating deep dive into what spiritual practices could be and what soul care looks like and kind of a holistic picture of that.
Yeah.
And so that was really huge for me because it answered questions I didn't really understand that I had been asking all along.
Yeah.
And brought together, kind of connected some dots that I didn't realize were not connected yet in my own faith. And so for the first time, I actually felt like I had not only a better understanding of myself and what it looked like to follow Jesus, but I also had a clear path forward into how I could grow to become more like him and how I could actually live more of the life that the kingdom was supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And so it was a hugely humbling time. As I said earlier, I literally threw my Enneagram across my room when I got the results and wrote a scathing review. But that just shows where I was at personally.
We all have our journey, right?
Yes. Yeah. So that was really huge. And I'm really thankful for that experience. I think the program really set me up with a really full idea of spiritual growth and soul care and spiritual formation that allowed me to keep expanding and growing. And so that's been something that unintentionally or intentionally, I've just continued to hunger for learning more and more. And so since then, I've intentionally placed myself in places where I'm learning about how different parts of the church have experienced this. So for instance, I went to a conference last year that actually centered people of color. And so it was bringing in a lot of their experiences and what their churches had taught them about what their experiences in America have caused them to run to and the spiritual practices that they have found that have helped sustain them. It was absolutely moving to hear about some of the ways they had grown and learned and how I could actually take that into my own life and learn for myself. And it widened my idea so much of the spiritual practices. Whether we like it or not, I have learned that a lot of our history, especially church history, is very white. It's very European.
Sure, yeah.
And obviously the church is at work all over the world. And so it has been a huge blessing to me to learn a little bit more every year about what is happening in other parts of the world and other parts of the church.
Right. Well, Christianity, I mean, that's where Christianity is exploding, right?
Well, exactly. They have plenty to teach us.
The majority world. I mean, that's where it's at. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I love that. That's cool.
Yeah.
So aside from coming to the Perch and experiencing retreats, which people should do, right? What would you suggest? Website, Instagram, all that stuff to get
the Perch? Okay. Yeah, yeah. So if you want to follow us, we're just at The Perch Place, and that's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're actually, if you're close by, the best way to experience this is to actually come to something. But actually starting this year, I'm rolling out some more digital type resources that can help you in your own place to experience a little bit about what we're doing in your own place, especially related to things that you can help use in your own church or your own small group or your own context to help you do that. So
awesome. Well, that sort of answers my question.
Yay!
Actually, I was like, if they can't come to the Perch, what should they do? Well, following you and your resources up forthcoming,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Is a good, are there maybe books or like authors or that also people could check out just to kind of,
That's great. So the number one book that I always recommend is actually by Adele Calhoun. It's called The Spiritual Disciplines Handbook.
Okay.
And it is, it actually just last year came out with an updated version. And so literally it's a book of, 100 different spiritual practices. She explains what it is, where it came from, how it can be done, and how you can actually do it in your own life. Mm. And the new edition actually came out because she added like 20 to it. So
That's amazing.
it is a fantastic resource to just learn a little bit about other ways to connect with God and grow and learn more about yourself. And it's really written in a way that anyone can pick it up and understand. It's a huge resource that I use at The Perch when I'm putting together our events.
Yeah, yeah.
But beyond that, I think one thing that has been... Well, I think two things. One is any type of tool that can help you understand a little bit more about yourself. So if the Enneagram is helpful to you, like dive into the Enneagram. If it's not the Enneagram, if you hate that, find something else. But I think the more we can understand a little bit about ourselves and how we tick and our blind spots, the more we're able to understand what we truly need in soul care.
Yeah.
So I think that's really helpful. And then third, I just, as I was saying, I think I've been so moved by learning about what other areas of the church are doing. And so I actually intentionally in my own personal Twitter have completely filled it with people who don't look like me, who don't necessarily believe everything that I believe, just to learn. And so I think any way that you can surround yourself with people from other cultures your own, the better you'll be for it.
Yeah. That's brilliant. I love that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thanks for those resources. I especially... Just the knowing yourself piece, I think, is so important and so
important.
Not done because it's hard. Yes. It's hard work, right?
It's so hard and it's uncomfortable. And then we like to just run away if it's uncomfortable.
Totally. That's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good word. Thanks. So we totally got distracted from your story, though, and all this stuff.
Because
I had so many questions. Yes. So how do you feel like some of the... You know, the path that you have been on has like led you to this Perch place.
Yes. Yeah. So I think, well, obviously having some ministry background is hugely helpful in this new role. But I think let me put it this way. I started having the dream for what became the Perch many years ago.
Okay.
But it was really easy to push down and see as just like a silly thing that didn't make any sense. And I think part of that was because when I looked out, I didn't see something just like it. I didn't see people hungering for something like that like I was. And so it kind of just felt like, well, it'll just be me at all the events hanging out by myself.
Yeah, because there's two options when that happens, right? Mm-hmm. There's either I've stumbled on something that like is desperately needed in this world and nobody knows, or my idea is bad because no one else is doing it. Right. There's a push pull there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I now look at it as that first way and just say, this is so amazing. Sure. This is so needed. Yeah. But I think a huge part of my story is actually just gaining the confidence to say, if I need this so desperately, there are other people who also need this desperately. And we can be fellow journeyers in this and I can help provide that space for us to do that. So a lot of my journey was failing and messing up, and finding church ministry was a whole lot harder than I ever anticipated it to be. And being honestly, in ministry, I was exposed to really beautiful things and really, really hard things. It really exposed me to, you know, kind of the behind the curtain, if you will, of church life, which isn't always pretty. And so I think I had to grow a lot in my understanding of the good and the bad and the hard and still love it and grow in that love and confidence that this is still a good thing and this is still something worth fighting for, which is a huge part of that journey. And then when I ended up in Christian publishing, I honestly felt like totally ridiculous. I felt completely out of place. And yet I was actually creating resources for church leaders and for churches to do stuff like this, like small groups and spiritual development and leadership development and how you take your pastoral team through something like this. And over time, it helped me gain confidence like, oh, wait, no, like this is, I actually know something about this. And if I don't know, I can turn to other people and I know the places to go to find out what that looks like. And I can curate content that is helpful for people. And that was a hugely helpful skill set.
Yeah.
And then actually, which is the most ironic part to me about it is, so now I own, you know, I have my own business and I'm essentially a one-person show. So I never knew anything about marketing. I never knew anything about publishing content. I knew nothing about event planning. And honestly, my role in publishing, I was just an editor. Huh. I shouldn't have learned any of those things. And I unfortunately or unfortunately, I was in a position in part of an organization that there was a lot of mess. And so I ended up doing a lot of things that were not part of my job description.
Sure.
And so I ended up doing a lot of marketing things for a non-marketer and learning a lot of skills that I never, ever would have signed up to learn.
Yeah.
And then ended up in this place where I'm like, oh, wait, I actually know how to do some basic marketing for this new business that I started. So now I look back and laugh because it's beautiful to be able to feel like I was being completely prepared without having any idea that I was being prepared for it. I mean, in those moments, I was so frustrated. Like, this is not my job. Why am I doing this? Why am I doing all these things that have nothing to do with my actual job? I don't even have enough hours to do my actual job. And now I'm looking back going, oh my gosh, thank you God so much. Like, I would not know what to do if I didn't have those skills.
Right.
So yeah, there was a lot of the confidence and internal things that happen, but a lot of skill building that I never would have known to ask for. And even I think about my original career desires of wanting to be a teacher. Oh my goodness, so much about lesson planning and curating helpful experiences that help people actually grow and learn is a whole lot like event planning.
Yeah, I hadn't even considered that. Yeah.
So I feel like I'm in a kind of a different kind of classroom now, which is really fun.
Right. Yeah. You've been trained all along the way to do what you do now.
So weird.
So what was the tipping point that was like, I have this burden for this thing, you know, what was the tipping point to like, let's pull the trigger and
So good question. So again, like I was saying, I had the dream for years and literally just kept pushing it down and was coming up with like really lame excuses for not doing it. Let's be honest. I like literally remember being like, God, I don't even know what I would call that thing. Like, that's ridiculous. I'm not doing that. Like, what? Like, anyway, so I totally for years just kind of kept pushing it down. And a big part of it, honestly, was I loved my day job. I loved for a long time when I was doing in Christian publishing, I loved it. And it felt really selfish and like weird and discontent to even be dreaming about something else when my day job was so good and so rewarding. And so I remember praying like, you are going to have to hit me over the head if you want me to do something
that
different.
That is such a dangerous prayer.
Oh, it's a terrible prayer. Like, I don't recommend it because then you get hit over the head. And so I just it's crazy. I was there for 7 years and for literally 6 of those years, I literally was praying this prayer like, you are going to have to hit me over the head if you want me to do something else, because this is a dream come true. Like, this is beautiful and I'm never leaving this. And right around that 6-year mark, things started to change. And it kind of just, it opened my eyes to just see this may not be my forever career. There were just some things, and being an 8, you can understand perhaps, but there were some things that I saw happening. And so for instance, I remember very distinctly, like very naive 8, I came into a meeting and I had just recently kind of seen some unhealthy things happening behind the scenes. And my thought was, oh, well, people just must not realize that this is happening. And so I'm just going to come in and like, not only share it, but also say, here's how I can help with this. Here's how we can make a change. So I totally like went into a meeting like, hey, everyone, like you probably don't know, but these really unhealthy things are happening, but I think we can change it. And here's how I can help with that. And I'm really excited. I should also say I'm a 7 wing. So I have a little like, you know, a little that going on. There, and so I like come in like, and quickly realized, oh my goodness, I have just hit every landmine that you're not supposed to mention is there.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's not the first time that's happened for me as an 8, but it was really startling to feel like this place that I absolutely loved and felt like was my forever career suddenly became like, oh no, like I just walked into something and I don't know how this is going to turn out. And so I committed to spend a year trying to make things better, trying to see what I could do, what was in my control, having a lot of hard conversations. And sadly, every conversation I had, things got worse. And so things started turning pretty clear for me that it was not the place for me anymore. And still, though, I wasn't totally connecting the dots that that meant that this dream was the next thing.
Sure.
I just thought, well, I've committed to be here for this long. I'm going to, you know, to myself, it wasn't like I said that out loud, but between me and God, I'm going to figure this out and see what I can do. So I had this really, really terrible day. It was September of 2017. It's like it just happened yesterday. I had the worst day of my life. And I just remember driving home, and I had about an hour commute. And so I spent all of my commute praying every day. It was a great time
Yeah, that is a great time. But it's a good spiritual practice,
yes,
right there.
It was
there,
a great spiritual practice. But so I remember driving home and I'm bawling, just bawling. I can barely see the road and I'm trying to pray and just saying, like, I don't understand. Like, you brought me here. This has been such a dream. This has been such a beautiful place of ministry. And yet I feel like you are slamming the door shut. Like, what is going on? And you need to show me what I'm supposed to do. And as I'm praying this, I literally get the name The Perch in my head, and I have the idea for our first event, which was the Empty and Fill retreat. And I was so mad. I was so mad at God, because I was like, I am talking about this and you are talking about that, and you are not paying attention to what I'm saying. And then I was like, okay, hold on. I'm going to write that down though, because that was really good. And so all that to say, I decided at that point to start taking some baby steps to say, well, let me just see if the URL is available. Let me just see if Facebook handle is available. Let me just see what a couple people would think if I did something like this. And overwhelmingly, every baby step I took, I just was totally confirmed with what I was going to do. So even what's so funny is, so we just in January did our second annual Empty and Fill retreat, which is a day-long retreat focused on reflecting on the past year and then filling up for the new year. So letting go of what we need to from the past year and then filling up with whatever we feel like God has for us for the new year. And it's a really beautiful day. And I say that because I have very little to do with the day. I set it up. I have the, you know, prompts and things, but I teach for about 45 minutes of the whole day. And the rest of the day is time spent with you and God or with you in groups reflecting. And so I just get to like be a witness. It's such a beautiful, beautiful time. So that was the first event that we ever did. And it was January of 2018. And I literally remember I was like, well, when no one signs up, I'll know that this is not what I should do. And 11 people signed up almost immediately.
Whoa.
And then I had a few more people who came, who got to come kind of because they were helping in some way. So I ended up having 16 people from our very first event, which might not sound like a lot, but we were in a really small space. So that was the max we could have had. And it was an amazing day. So I thought, well, okay, this was pretty good. I'll do one more. I'll do one more, and then that will fail, and then I'll know that I shouldn't be doing this. And our second event was an Enneagram, intro to the Enneagram, and it completely sold out. So it sold out before the event even happened. So we ended up having to do it again later in the year because we had sold out. So yeah, so all that to say, I had a pretty clear indication after just a couple of weeks that this was something was happening, and it was worth exploring.
Yeah.
And I say that literally how I felt. I felt like, well, I'm not sure totally, but I feel like it's worth exploring and it's worth taking another baby step. So yeah, long story short, after just a couple of months, things were very clear at my job, my day job, that I needed to be done. And so I took the leap actually beautifully. This was not planned. Beautifully, my last day there was Good Friday. And so Easter Sunday, I started this new thing, and it was crazy. So, so now The Perch is my full-time gig, and it took me another like 2 months before I actually was like calling it like my gig. I wasn't sure what to say, especially last summer early on, like, oh, may I do this thing on the side of no other job. I don't know. what to call it.
But it's still a side hustle.
But it's a side thing. It's nothing serious. Yeah. And as soon as I started treating it like a serious thing, things started really taking off. So actually toward the end of last year, we moved into our own space in downtown Aurora. And so I get to host all of my events one place instead of all over Aurora, which is what I was at before.
Yeah, sure. Well, downtown Aurora is so cool. And
awesome. I just love it. Yeah. It's so amazing. And being someone that has grown up there, I've seen it in its really terrible days. Now I'm seeing it in this beautiful growth rejuvenation stage. And for those who don't know, it's the second largest city in Illinois, just second to Chicago.
Which is bizarre. Like,
it's so crazy. And it's so just diverse and beautiful. And I love being a part of it as a business owner.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. So what sort of, feedback or what sort of have you seen from people, you know, as you've like taken this journey and, you know, shown people the, you know, soul care.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been really beautiful. Like I could not have expected the things that I've been able to be a part of and witness and see. So one thing I just always think is beautiful to share is I was really, really intentional. I knew that most of my audience would be Christians, and that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to create a safe space that if you were kind of not there yet or maybe recovering or healing.
There's a lot of recovering
around. Yeah, yes, like right. I wanted to make it safe. So yes. I intentionally, even when I was renting spaces, never rented a church building. Mm. Just because I wanted to, if that was a barrier at all, I didn't want that to be an issue. Yeah. And so what's been really, really cool is I've actually had several people come that either have no kind of faith, that are just kind of exploring and figuring out what that looks like, or people who have had some, you know, frankly, some really rough experiences with church and are just trying to explore what does it look like and could I be part of the church again?
Yeah.
And that's been really beautiful to feel like I'm part of that. And
sure.
Yeah, that's been amazing. And to give people an idea of like, this is what it can look like to connect with God. And it's with people, it's with community.
Yeah.
It is not to be just done by yourself. But can you see yourself being part of that fold again, even if you've been burned in the past?
Yeah. What cool work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing I've really been excited about is I've had a lot of people who are in ministry who really need that place where they can be fed, which is oh, so beautiful. Like, I totally get it. A huge passion of mine is actually for people who are in ministry because I've been in that place and done so much publishing work around that and had so many contacts in the area that I feel for people in ministry in this deep kind of way. And so to be able to provide a space for that, not only for their own growth, but to help give them tools that they can take with them to their own context is huge. Huge blessing to me, to feel like we can provide that kind of a space. So that's been really, really neat. I think the overall thing though has just been, I think people are surprised when they come to the event that this was more peaceful, more calming, more enlivening than they maybe even experienced or expected.
Yeah.
That they experienced a lot more than they expected. And that's like the best compliment that I could have that, because my goal is always to lead them into the presence of God. Like, let me step out of the way. I'm going to create kind of a experience, a helpful environment that you can have this experience,
right. But
then let me step out of the way.
Yeah.
And so that's a huge compliment. That's the best compliment that I could get, that they felt like it was more than they could have expected.
Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful for sure. And also great for the business.
Yeah.
I
mean, yeah. Like,
and that's the tricky part of what you do. It's so hard. Nonprofits or, you know, just because you do have that church aspect, but you're also running a business at the same time. And how have you navigated just some of that?
Yes. Yeah, because it is, you know, there are things like, in a lot of ways, we're seen as a church. I think people who come feel like it's an extension of a church. And at the same time, like, we don't do offerings. I'm not actually a nonprofit.
Oh, okay.
Like, I actually, you have to pay me to pay the bills. Right. Like, if you want this space.
This is my job and this is my building. So,
And part of it was because I really wanted to be able to be a business that could give back to the community in monetary ways. And so, so that's kind of the model that where I'm at right now. And I'm still only about a year old. So we'll see how this all pans out. But that has been an interesting aspect because, for instance, I call myself an organization because I just don't even know what to call it.
So
it's been a tricky balance because my heart is like, oh, just do all the things and anyone can come to all the things.
Yes.
And at the same time, like, that doesn't quite work. So this is where my eight is helpful because I can't step in and be like, well, at some point we have to have an event that people pay for.
Right.
And my goal from the beginning has always been to be very manageable in pricing, something that you could definitely handle.
Yeah.
But I have to make sure my costs are covered. I have to make sure that there's enough money left over for rent and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I run on a really thin budget, but I wanted to, it's an interesting balance. So navigating that has been interesting. Again, another skill set that I learned in publishing, running on a shoestring budget and trying to understanding your worth and what the worth is of those retreats or of the products that we have online, that there is a worth, yeah, a value to them, that people can pay for them.
Right.
But also doing it in an ethical way. Like, I'm not just doing it where I'm just making loads of money or, right, you know, gouging or, you know, somehow misleading you into, yeah, what it costs. And so that was a good mindset to gain and skill set to gain from that, yeah, experience, because, yeah, I think so much in the church world, you feel like should just be free.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And so finding that balance between what is fair,
yeah,
and, yeah, and also not free.
Well, and the people coming assign value to it based on how you value it, right?
Like, absolutely.
If it's just free, they're like, well, it must not have much value, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's a really
yeah,
valid point to all that stuff.
Yeah. It is fascinating to me as I've gotten into this business. Like, I have started to join some groups, especially like on Facebook, or in learning about how other people are pricing. And it is fascinating that there is a Christian world of how much can I make?
Yeah. It's bizarre.
It's so bizarre. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually had like someone reach out to me as she had looked at my site and reached out and was like, oh, you are not charging enough. You, right, should be charging double, triple, quadruple that, because you should be making tons and you should be able to like basically not work because you should just be making all this money. And I was like, what? So it's a fascinating world to, yeah, be a part of in Christian business, like not labeled Christian.
Yeah, but yeah,
as a Christian, yeah, in business.
Yeah.
It's an interesting world. Yeah.
I do love you talking about though being an eight and how that comes in handy. I mean, if you were a two, literally you, oh, would, gosh, not ever make money.
No, you would lose money all the time.
So God, yeah, it's, yes, it's cool how all those things sort of come together. Like running a, mm-hmm, business like you do needs that,
yes,
side.
Yes. And, yeah, I do, like, as my social justice side comes, like, there, yeah, are times where I'm like, this is absolutely a free event because this is just needed and, right, this is for the good, sure, of the community. And there are other times where I'm like, absolutely not. This is, right, this is our bread and butter. This is, if you want this, then this is what it's worth and, right, this is what the value is. And people are paying that. So, yeah, I'm clearly not, you know, being extravagant or something. But there are times where my social justice side, I'm like, this is good, or to offer certain individuals this free to come because I know this is important to you, right, and this would be helpful to you. And so I love being able to offer those kinds of things, but I can offer those because I'm actually, sure, charging and have money coming in that, yeah, I can cover the cost of someone coming for free.
Yeah, that's good. I appreciate you being willing to explore, yeah, all that business, absolutely, stuff with me and stuff. So, well, are you cool with us jumping into the last two questions?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
So my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
Yes. So in high school, I actually was the manager of a water park.
Okay.
So just to paint this picture a little bit, I was 16 years old. And I was the manager of a water park. And it's Aurora has two park district owned water parks. Okay. And I was at one of those. Okay. And so it's just like a really funny picture of this. Like, I had to handle all customer service. And so I remember one day someone had put too much chlorine in the pool, and so much that it was like stripping the color from people's swimsuits.
Oh no.
And there was a man who had walked in with a navy blue set of trunks and walked out with a white set of trunks. And he was clearly upset. And I had to somehow like diffuse the situation as a 16-year-old who like knowingly is like, oh my goodness, this is really bad. I can't believe there's that much chlorine in the pool. And, you know, with a man at least twice my age.
Right.
And so, whoa, that was a really weird job.
Yeah. But also prepared you in a lot, yeah, of ways, right?
That's true. That's true. I'll take it.
Yeah. Customer service, ooh, is never a bad investment for, you know, the future.
It is. Right. It's kind of miserable. Yeah. It's like a rite of passage.
I think everybody yes, who gets into college should have to do customer service for
yeah,
a period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So finally, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring the kingdom of God more into their work?
Yes. I think for a long time in my younger years of faith, I thought that bringing ministry into your work had to look very blatant and outward.
Sure.
And so I think one thing that I have learned and I think is so crucial is that bringing ministry to work is actually a whole lot more about what goes on behind scenes than what is outward. And I think I learned that you can actually be a part of an outwardly Christian organization that is really not doing a lot of ministry in the background and handling things with, you know, ethically, Christianly, morally. And so I think being a person of faith in whatever role you have is a huge way to bring ministry to all you do in ways that you probably will never know fully the impact that you had on your coworkers, on your team. And it doesn't mean you can't ever bring, you know, more outward sites of your faith.
Yeah.
But I think that will actually lay a groundwork for those more outward parts, that they'll actually be more welcomed when there's that undergirding of behind the scenes faith living out.
That's cool. And I love that advice. That's awesome.
Thanks.
I appreciate that. So, well, thanks again for making the trip and meeting with me. And
talking. So, what a joy. Thank you so much.
It's good to meet you. I got to check out all the events and hit something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Soon, so. All right. Well, thanks.
Thanks.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Amy. I'd say there's a lot of food for thought, especially with Lent starting tomorrow, March 6th. There's a lot of food for thought about what we can be doing in Lent. And if you don't have sort of a thing going in Lent already, maybe picking up some of these spiritual practices is something you could do. I think it's worth investing. It's worth at least praying about, thinking about. And I have all those resources that she talked about in the episode in the show notes. So go look at those. Maybe there's something that God wants to speak to you through this season or through a spiritual practice that's just a little different than anything you've ever done. So there can be lots of great stuff out there. If you do check out something, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. I love chatting about that sort of stuff and what people are doing for soul care and growing deeper with God. So yeah, love to hear about it. Let me know. And until next time, get out there and hustle.